All right, guys. It has been, probably 4 or 5 months now since we recorded a podcast. Gabe and I have kept in touch on and off throughout hunting season, so I figured he'd be a perfect guest to have back on to get this thing started again. So Gabe is joining me tonight, kind of last minute, and we're going to crank out a podcast for you. So why don't you reintroduce yourself to the audience for the people that maybe didn't listen to the first episode and tell them what you guys are all about, and we'll get rolling.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve. Honored to be your first guest back. So my name's Gabe. I run a small page with my buddies called Beaverhead Antlers. We're born and raised in Montana. I'm living in Wyoming now. We just get after it, you know, hunt elk all fall, deer, then get out and pick up lots of sheds in the spring. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Right on, man. Yeah. It's funny how, you know, I'm going to include myself in this, but we always discount ourselves as small if you don't have a huge following, right? You feel like you're irrelevant, but I picked up on that. Sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have pointed that out, but
no, it's funny. I guess I feel the same way. You know, a couple years ago, it's like, oh, we had 1,000 followers and didn't even have a YouTube page. And, you know, now we've got, 2,000 YouTube subscribers, which back then would have been like, whoa, that's crazy. And 5,500, on Instagram, which again, back then would have been like, oh my gosh, I can't believe. But now it's, you see everyone 100,000, 200,000 followers. So you're like, okay, that's nothing. But yeah, we had a couple reels blow up and hit like 1 million views recently. And we're like, oh, that's pretty crazy. Like, that's kind of cool that it has that reach. But yeah, still.
Yeah, it's, you know? Oh yeah, I hear you there. It doesn't matter. As long as you enjoy sharing your trips and your photos and stuff. I mean, it is what it is. It some guys just, they blow up, and some don't. So anyway, well, I like to talk about hunting stories. I think that's why people come to listen to this podcast. There's plenty of other podcasts out there about gear and controversial topics and things like that. So, Let's just jump right into it, man. I saw you guys had some killer success this year in 2025, just like you did in 2024. So since, you had such a great season again, I know it ended kind of short and quick and in some regards, because you punched your tags pretty quick, but let's start off with your first hunt of the year. We could talk about scouting a little bit if you want. Just take it from here and.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go into a few things. You know, we season starts always with putting in for tags. You know, I've got what I have this year. I had my general over-the-counter stuff for Wyoming, and then I drew a elk archery permit in Montana and some general stuff, and then Ryan drew an elk permit up there as well. So really my season started with going up and doing some scouting up in Montana. You know, where I like to elk hunt down here, I kind of know where I want to go, what I want to do when I'm in there. And so didn't really need a scout here as much. Went up into Montana, did some scouting, and then opening weekend up in Montana, I went up with Ryan and we got him a bull. I think the second day, a nice 7x6, nothing crazy giant, but just a good mature bull with the bow, which was pretty cool. And then, I wasn't going to plan to go up for my Montana tag anytime soon. I wanted to wait for the rut. And so I was like, let's go take a week off and go hunt my Wyoming tag. And so last year when I was in there, I had seen some giant deer, or giant to me anyway, and didn't have a deer tag. So this year I was like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go in with the bow, and deer season opens on a Monday. So we'll bring my bow and my rifle in. We'll pack in a camp a few miles, and we'll just go try to find a big old muley buck. And then after we kill him, you can go home and I'll go hunt elk for a week by myself, and it'll be fun. So I get off work early on Friday and zip over there as fast as I can, take my four-wheeler in a few miles and set up the spotter. And like right away, I'm like, there's a bull pushing cows. Way up at the top of the mountain, there's another one. I'm like, damn, those are right where we were going to take our camp to. Like, all right, well, maybe we won't be chasing deer in the morning, but you know, we'll keep our plan the same and just see what happens. So anyway, Ryan shows up at whatever, 10, 11 o'clock, and we wake up at 3 a.m., I think, crawl out of the truck and driveway in on the wheeler and get up into the high country. And I'm like, oh, you know, there's no one in here. And like the second we get up there, suddenly there's just a tent and there's like dudes getting ready. I'm like, oh, shoot, dude, I thought we were going to have it to ourselves for a few days. But it's kind of sprinkling. So they were in the tent and we just walked right by them. We're like, ah, it's fine. You know, we're going to be here forever anyway. So not a big deal. So we get about half mile past them and we're getting up into the basin where I'd seen the elk that night. And we hear a bugle. It's like first light. I was like, you know, I know those bulls were mature. Like they're way far off, but they had good harems. So, you know, we're here and there's other dudes. So now I'm a little stressed about just not going and looking. So we kind of pivot our plans from where I used to camp to this other spot. And we drop camp and I'm like, oh, let's just see. And I take like five steps out of camp and boom, there's this gorgeous bull 400 yards away pushing his cows around. I was like, like that's a pretty nice bull. He's in the wide open on this big steep ridge and we're sitting there watching him and I can't even stop myself from like going and still looking for mule deer because I'm like, this is the same ridge where I saw the bucks last year. So I'm looking for deer and there's this big 6-point just rutting and tearing up the ground and I'm still trying to focus on deer, you know. And as we're sitting there, Ryan's like, you know, dude, they're kind of moving our way a little bit. And there's one bench on this about halfway up that mountain and it's got like this little tiny group of trees. He's like, you know, it looks like they're walking right to that. Why don't we like go get up on there? I was like, I guess, like, I don't know how we're going to get into this draw without being seen and then get up that side hill before they get there. But, you know, sure. Like we're here. We might as well, whatever. So we drop our camp there and we sneak down through the timber and somehow they don't see us. We're like, okay. And get over to that hill. And it's like this. Couldn't believe how steep it was. And so, you know, the first really big hard hike of the year, and we're just huffing and puffing going up it. And we get about 20 yards from that little patch of trees. And suddenly Ryan's like, stop. And I'm like, what? You look up and his antlers are just skyline. He's at like 20 yards. And you can just see antlers. And we're like, oh, well, my bow is just in my hand. I don't have an arrow knocked. Like, well, this hunt's over. Like, of course. We're, you know, oh, we were too aggressive. Shouldn't have come in here. And he turns his head and whatever, walks off. And you can just hear hoofs. I'm like, oh, you know, there they go, whatever. So I look back at Ryan, kind of defeated. And he's like, nah, dude, I don't think they spooked, man. I think he's just kind of running around. I was like, okay, well, sure. So I set my stuff down, knock an arrow, and start scooting up the hill again. And 5 yards, 10 yards from those trees, and boom, I see cows like 100 yards. And I'm like in the wide open. So I'm like, oh, I'm busted. You know, here we go again, ruined it. They were still here. So I sit down. And as I sit down or crouch kind of, here he comes over the ridge. I just see his antlers coming at us again. And I'm like, oh, like here he comes. He's coming to basically right where he was just standing. And so I just kind of point to Ryan and just kind of instinctively draw back as he does his tiny little dip where he's out of sight. And then he crests the ridge and I'm holding and I just go range and Ryan doesn't say anything. I'm like, okay, well, 40, sure, 35, 40. And he's quartering pretty hard too. And I just let the shot go off and watched it bury, watched that lighted knock bury. And, you know, he turned tail and ran. And Ryan obviously was, you know, he was like too scared to move with the camera. So he was like trying to get it all. And he did a hell of a job getting it on camera. It was impressive. It all happened like so fast and he was ready for it. But yeah, he just ran around the hill and, you know, I didn't even really look for blood, to be honest. I was just like, you know, I was like, I could see the arrow was gone. I was like, that, that bull's dead around the corner. As soon as we get over there, it's like, I know he's just there. So, you know, we did our little celebrations and hunt recap and then walk around the corner. And sure enough, he's piled up in the wide open, maybe went 200 yards. So, you know, that's first stock of the year, first hunt of the year with a weapon in hand. And it was done in 30 minutes. It was just unbelievable. That's this bull behind me. But
yes. So I know from last year, you're really, you've upped your game over the last couple of years and you're looking for mature bulls. Like, you're not going to punch your tag on a raghorn, right, especially early in the season. So, have you put, I'm just curious, not that score matters to me, but I am curious. I'm sure you've taped him by now. What did he score? You punched your tag day one. I'm sure he's a pretty good bull.
He went 326.
Nice. Yeah. That's a great bull.
Yeah, absolutely. Over the counter. I went in there this year. I'll have to, when I get to the deer story, I'll tell a little bit more, but I had joked to my brothers like, I'm going to go in there. And the goal was 500 inches of antler between my bull and my buck. So, you know, I want, usually my target is a 300 class bull. And while I would never, ever pass a 300 on an over the counter, I was just like really hoping to get 320, 330, just based off of what I killed last year and had seen in there last year. So to, you know, 30 minutes into my hunt, check the 320 box off the list. I was like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I don't even know what to say. I mean, 30 minutes into the hunt, there's really, that was just super quick. I bet you next year is probably going to be 12 or 14 days or however many days you have set aside is probably going to go down to the wire. That's just how things go. But
yeah,
that's awesome, man. Congratulations. And I think the, you know, you earn it, even if it wasn't hard, you know, maybe this year it happened quick, but it's all the years prior to that you've spent in there. You right. knew where the elk were going to be, you know, and they were there again year after year. So I think that the years of work are probably the reason why that happened so quickly for you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I've in the past, you know, since I've become a Wyoming resident, so this is my, I think this was my third season of being able to hunt as a resident. And the past 2 years, I bet you I've spent a month in there during archery season. You know, I didn't, 2 years ago, I didn't kill a bull in there. It was the first year I'd found it. Last year I was in there a crazy amount during archery and killed a bull in there opening of rifle. And then, yeah, this year it was just like, you know, that just know there's, you know, a few different zones they really like to hang out in. And, you know, for whatever reason this year, it just worked out. And man, I haven't killed an archery bull since I want to say 2020. So the amount of days I've spent archery hunting in the past 5 years is yeah, it's a lot. So to be that lucky to get one that fast was kind of mind-blowing. Like after the shot and stuff, I'm sitting there just going like, dude, what just happened, man? Like,
that's bow hunting, man.
It's like I've never seen an archery hunt just come together like that. I never called, I never did anything, we just got into position and it just worked out. It's like,
yeah,
that's just never,
it's crazy how fast it happened. Definitely. Yeah. But that's how bow hunting is, you know, as well as I do. It feels like it's never going to happen until it does. Absolutely. And then when it does happen, the moment that it does all come together, it feels like it was super easy, right? Yeah. Like it went together, not maybe exactly how you pictured it in your mind when you set up, but sure, when it comes together, it seems like you could do it every day, but it just doesn't work like that. So
yeah, especially like that. We're like, man, he got a video of me, I think at one point where I did say that, I was like, man, this is just too easy, man. You know, like, you know, completely overlooking all the, you know, the months in the mountains I've spent over the past 5 years and just getting my butt kicked and never getting a shot or even a draw opportunity on a lot of bulls. For it to come together, that was pretty special for sure.
So you've got this bull down. It's opening. Is it opening day of archery elk season or opening day of deer?
It wasn't even. So opening day of deer was like Monday. So we were in there on Saturday. Okay. This was, I think, second week. This was September 13th, I want to say. So get, you know, right in that, maybe just shy of peak rut, but, you know, great rut activity. So we're in there. So yeah, we get this bull down. We're like, okay, well, we got to get him out of here. So we're whatever, 3-4 miles in, whatever it is. And we quarter him up, take a load out that night. I think we got him all the way out that day. We were able to get a load out pretty early and then come back in with nothing, you know, left our camp where it was, you know, like we're going to still got to come kill a deer in here. So we got everything loaded, got them all out. I think pretty much showed up at the Wheeler right at last light, right as it was getting dark. We got the second load out, and you know, early archery season, there's a lot of light. So it's not like we got them out super fast, man. It was a long day. You know, we put in 16 miles, whatever it was that day, and I don't know, 4,000 feet of elevation, if not more. So it was a big, it was a push, man. But it was a good time. So, yeah, so we get out of there, and I had to take my meat to town. So I took it to the closest town I could, dropped it off at a butcher, the stuff that I didn't want to take with me. And we headed back in the next day. I was like, well, you know, we were supposed to be looking for deer for 2 days, and we didn't do that. So let's go try to find a deer now. And we got in there, I think early afternoon on Sunday. Oh, go ahead.
Let me stop you real quick. So I want to talk about your elk tactics with a bow in your hand a little bit, and then we'll jump into the deer story.
For sure.
Are you guys the kind of guys that do a lot of calling, a combination of calling and spot and stalk, or do you focus primarily on spot and stalk? What's your guys' kind of go-to method for putting bulls down with a bow?
Man, on my hunt, there wasn't much tactic. I mean, it was just, yeah, just go try to get in a position, you know.
Talking in general, you know, would you do if you don't kill a bull in the first 30 minutes of light, you know, your typical year where you're hunting for 5 to 10 days, you know?
Sure. Yeah, my typical hunt in an area I know it still looks like, you know, getting some sort of scout in the night before. I'm really planning to go after them, and then getting up in there, lots of glassing, you know, location bugles. I'm not super big into trying to call stuff in. I mean, I'm okay at it. Obviously I'm not great. Maybe that's part of the issue. Part of the reason I don't call in more elk with it, but you know, with the caliber of bulls I typically tend to try to hunt, I have a really, really tough time in general units getting them to come into anything. You know, I can get responses, and again, that might just be a my fault thing. So I definitely prefer the route of just trying to find the elk and then just sneak in on them as best I can. You know, in archery season, it's usually pretty warm. So if we don't have luck getting in on them early, I try to, you know, bed them down and say, okay, what pond can I sit right here? Or, hey, I'm going to leave the, you know, I've been messing with these elk all morning. I know there's elk over here. Let's go sit some other water, a wallow, a pond, wherever, and just try to go kind of kill time. And hopefully something comes to water. And if not, we'll get back out after them pretty good, you know, when it gets dark out. So I prefer the quiet method for me. What's your deal?
We've always called because I think it's just been ingrained in us from hunting in Washington. Our country is, I live on the coast. To draw a tag on the east side of the mountains, which is a lot more like, you know, Wyoming country where it's broken up, sage, pockets of timber. You can find areas, you can glass bulls, right? On the east side of our state. But the west side of the state is like it's a rainforest. So you're not sneaking up on bulls in, you know, ferns that are 5 feet tall and blackjack, and it's just too loud, right? I mean, there is opportunities in clear cuts, the perfect age clear cuts, like 3 to 4 years old, where you can still, you know, sneak through there on a rainy day where you're not breaking a bunch of sticks and stuff, because there's also a bunch of debris on the ground from it being logged previously. So we've just gotten accustomed to calling a ton to find bulls. and then to just to call them in so we can get a shot. So we primarily call. Now, it's always on my mind when I'm out of state, you know, to leave my calls in the truck, because I do believe that if I want to kill a upper age class bull or a larger antlered bull, that I need to put the calls away to increase my odds of doing that. But it's very hard to get away from what's worked for us every year, right? Like, we've hunted out of state for several years now, and I'm not trying to toot our horn at all, but I'm just spitting facts. Is,
yeah,
you know, we've killed bulls, branch bulls, every year out of, in a different state, in a different zone, in a different area, like 7 years in a row now. Some trips we've killed two bulls in units, sure, we've never set foot in before. So now they're not giants. They're not 330 inches. They're not. We've killed a lot of, you know, 260, 270 class 6 points and stuff like that. But I don't know, man, one of these years I got to leave the calls at home and just try it and see how it goes. Cause I think that's what I need to do to get to that next level of bull for sure.
Yeah. You know, it's some places it seems to work really well. I hear more than my fair share of stories of people doing well, being able to call in big bulls. I've just never had that kind of success. Like, yeah, we've, I think our first day in that spot last year, yeah, we called in 3 or 4 legal bulls the first day that we could have shot, but it was, you know, it wasn't the age class we were looking for. And maybe that's just a more of a timing thing, maybe less of a, oh, I'm bad at calling, and more of, you got to get in there at a time where those bulls haven't herded up yet and they're still searching for cows. And I'm sure there's a different strategy where I hunt, where it just has to, it's just a timing thing, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you my 2 cents real quick. So we called in a few bulls over the years that had cows for sure. I know I had cows, but most of the bulls you're calling in my opinion, are bulls that are dogging the herd, right? They're not the lead bull. They don't have a harem of cows. They're just on the outskirts of the herd.
Yeah.
And you get them to come in just to check you out, to see what bull you are, where'd you come from? You know, I'm trying to pick a cow or two off this herd, like, get out of here type of thing. You're not calling in the herd bull. So, at least in my experience, that's what I feel like we're doing. We're calling in that satellite bull that's there. I can hear the herd bull bugling still in the distance, but a lot of the times these bulls come in silent too, where you hear, you're bugling between the herd bull and yourself. And before you know it, a satellite slips in and you hear him break a stick or bust some branches with his horns or whatever. So anyway, I was just curious, you know, I kind of figured that was your method. Based off watching your YouTube videos, I see some of the country you guys are hunting is, it's more broken up.
Yeah.
And whatnot, but right on, man.
Yeah. That's interesting. So yeah, it seems like it's always satellite bulls. It's just, you know, the only two bulls I've killed with a bow were definitely herd bulls, and they really were just, I'm being, you know, I tried the first bull I killed. We tried all day to call him in, you know, we followed him all day. We were calling and we were an elk all day and just could never get him off the cows. And the only reason I got to kill that bull was, you know, it's midday and he decides, hey, I bedded my cows up here and we're in some really thick, nasty country. And he drops down this finger to go rake a tree and get some water. And we just slip through and get on the ridge that he was on. And he says, okay, time to go back up, and walks by at 20 yards. So it had nothing to do with, yeah, this bull wanted to come fight me, or, you know, it is just, yeah, just made a play like we did this year and just got in the right position and things worked out. So, and you know, maybe that has to do with the number of elk in the area too. You know, your bull to cow ratio, I'm sure, matters. You know, if you got fewer cows running around and maybe less hunting pressure, more mature bulls, yeah, I'm sure you can pick off a pretty good bull that's a satellite, but it's just because he, you know, he's just not quite as tough as whoever's running the harem. So I don't know. That's just how we had success, but
yeah. And this year, I'll tell this story and then we'll move on to the deer thing. But we hunted Wyoming for the first time ever for elk. And we called in, I think, 6 or 7 branch bulls. I want to say maybe a few more. that we saw anyway, you know? Yeah. And what we ended up doing when I killed my bull, I think it was day 9, was we were hiking our butts off all day on this face we'd been on previously in the hunt. We knew there was elk in there. But it happened to be like a really stormy day and the elk weren't being super responsive or very aggressive that day. It was later in the season at this point. Mm-hmm. And we were working our way side hilling this huge face that had a bunch of side finger draws in it. And I was just working my way toward an area that I knew had a bunch of wallows and bulls and elk, you know, cows in it from previously. And we heard a bull bugle on his own, right? Sure. So we sat down and over a period of probably 5 to 10 minutes, we heard this bull bugle 3 or 4 different times. But as he was bugling, you could tell he was getting closer, right? He was working his way through the timber on the same face. And in my mind, you know, he was trying to locate another bull or find a herd so he could go try to, you know, get some cows or whatever.
Sure.
So one thing I always try to do when I hear an elk bugle is I try to determine if I think he's solo or if he has cows. And that usually will dictate kind of the approach we take when we call. So in this example, I had a pretty strong feeling that this bull was solo based off just how he was traveling through the country and his behavior. So we started cow calling. When he got within about 100, 150 yards, best we could tell, I dropped down the ridge. Sun was getting low, so the wind was sucking downhill. And I ended up dropping down below my brother, and the bull was to my left. And he started cow calling, and he cow called one time. And as soon as he cow called, that bull freaking fired off immediately and started coming in on a string. And I ended up getting in between, obviously, the elk and my brother. And the bull walked right to me 25 yards. And the cow calling in that situation worked perfectly, right? Like sure. He thought he found a cow. He was going to get a, he had a chance, and he came in just, like I said, on a string, and it worked out well. So I think just being able to judge, you know, those situations over years of experience with failures and success definitely helps, you know, as you're on your elk hunting journey with a bow for sure.
That's interesting. I don't think I'd ever, you know, not being a huge caller myself, I don't think I've ever been like, you know, is that elk with other elk? I've always just been like, there's a bull. Let's go see how big he is. Let's just go make a move. So that's interesting. I'm going to have to think about that moving forward.
Yeah. So like, you know, when you hear a bull fire off and let's say you bugle back, right? Mm-hmm. Do you ever get the feeling or do you just kind of know in your gut that that bull's pretty much standing in the same general area every time he bugles? He might come 50 yards, but then when he bugles again, he's back where you think you heard him the first time.
Sure.
When I hear a bull like that, I feel like that bull has cows. He has no reason to leave. He already has what he wants. You're not close enough to be a real threat to him, right? He's just responding to you, in my opinion. But when you hear a bull just randomly, especially kind of like mid-afternoon, wandering through the timber, bugling on his own, in my experience, that's usually not a bull that has 15 cows with him, right? Sure. That's something that you would see first thing in the morning when they're going to bed for the day, or maybe late in the evening, but usually it's not around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, in my opinion. So in that situation, it worked well, but I'm sure next year I'll have something similar happen and I'll be proven wrong that isn't the case. That's just how bow hunting goes.
Yeah. This time it'll be a big old 300 and it'll be pushing 20 cows and you'll be like, what? This is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's such a cool story, dude. I know we talked a little bit before season and I'm glad you're able to get in somewhere and get on some elk. I've looked at some of that country that you guys went to and some of that stuff excites me. I'm actually thinking of, you know, as good as my spot is, I'm thinking of taking a year off and just trying to go find some other country that in some other mountain ranges that looks good, because this is like the second spot I ever picked here, and I don't think I've tried a new spot in Wyoming. Maybe one other spot, and it was only because I was taking someone else. I was like, okay, fine, I'll go try somewhere new.
Yeah. I'd be more than happy to send you all my pins and my trail, everything that I did. I will say though, I know you and I talked about this during the season, but I was pretty bummed at the quality of bulls We spent, I think, 14 days total there, 12 solid days in the backcountry, hiked well over 100 miles. No doubt. Thousands and thousands of feet of vertical. We had llamas. We were way the hell in there. Like, we didn't start running into hunters until we got close to rifle season, like the day or two before rifle. We weren't really having pressure issues for the most part. We ran into a few guys, but it was pretty much like where we went, we had to ourselves for the most part. We did a ton of glassing, right? There was broken up country we could glass, but the bulls we saw glassing and the bulls we called in, I didn't see one bull over 300. Not one. Zero.
Out of all the elk.
Every bull I saw. We called in a handful that we could have, that were in bow range, but we saw way more than that, those bulls over the trip.
Yeah,
and not one of them broke 300.
That's insane.
And I was like, dude, this is Wyoming. Like, I thought I was going to have a real chance to kill a 300 inch bull. And these are all, they're all like not dinks, but they're, I wasn't impressed by one of them.
Right. Huh. I find that so crazy, man. That's always, and maybe I'm just lucky like that, but whenever I seem to get back into country like you were in, it's like, oh yeah. Oh, there's a 300. Oh, that one's probably close. Like, just, it's just weird. And I've heard good things about like the country that you were in. Like, I talked to some guys that guide in there, and they've said good things about at least the vicinity that you were in. You know, I mean, maybe a basin over, there's more cows or better feed or something that makes the big bulls hang out there instead. But that's just, it amazes me that they're not even just one. When you're that, you're just no people. You're seeing elk in the country, and there's just nothing mature.
I mean, there were people in there. Like, we went by two outfitter camps, but at one point I think our camp was 12 miles from the truck, at least 10. And we hunted from the bottom, you know, the lower trails to the highest ridges in that drainage, like in that unit. And we hunted two main drainages, like, and the side drainages that tied into it. Like, we hit a bunch of drainages. And like I said, from low to high country. Now don't get me wrong. I know they're in there, obviously, but to be back there for that long and spend that many days back there and not see one. I mean, we got 1 6 point on film that was really heavy, had weak G3s or G4s. I can't remember. I think it was G3s. He was probably 280, 290, but I know he wasn't over 300.
Sure.
So anyway.
Yeah. I wonder if it's just, you know, how many elk do you think you looked at over there? Not just bulls. I mean, just.
A ton. Every day we were in bulls. I mean, if you're a newer archery hunter and you're looking for reps in the red zone, phenomenal unit. You're going to be, if you get back from the truck 5 6 miles, you're going to be an elk every single day. No doubt about it. Bulls, no doubt.
Sure.
Multiple bulls a day if you put the work in. But, just didn't see the age class. And I got to admit, I was pretty bummed about that. Coming home, my brother was pretty bummed, probably more bummed than I was. And I definitely was like, man, it's going to take 10 years to draw this damn tag again. And I don't feel like we did it justice. You know,
I don't know if I want it again. You know,
I definitely wouldn't go, you know, there's people that have asked me, friends and stuff that can draw and they want to know where we went. And I'm like, dude, I'm not going to tell you, because if I tell you, you're going to go, because we saw a lot of elk, but Go check something else out. Like, if there's better units, I know there has to be. Yeah. So.
Yeah, no, it's, and maybe I got lucky with the one spot where I certainly got lucky with the spot I picked. I've been fortunate to see lots of bulls in there over the years that I'd be more than happy to take with any weapon in my hand. But you know, it's crazy to think, like, I'm sure if I was in your shoes, I'd be going through the same thing. Like, why the heck are we way back in here and just somehow can't find that's only like a 5.5 year old bull. When you're in countries like that, you'd think that, you know, you might even come across a 340, 350 plus in the general unit. Like, that's really not that unheard of. It's not that uncommon, but
yeah,
it's wild.
There were two drainages that I really, really wanted to hunt. Unfortunately, both of those drainages had outfitters in them. Mm-hmm. And, I don't like to hunt next to people, really. The last thing I want to do is like feel extra pressure to get on a herd first thing in the, like, I want to just hunt at my own speed, my own pace, like just naturally, my natural instincts take over, not be worried about that. So out of respect for the outfitter and out of, you know, how I like to hunt, we just avoided those areas. We ended up, when we moved our camp the first time, it was like on day four, we had a specific area picked out. And when we got to that spot, there was an outfitter there. So we ended up making a, like another 4 mile loop up this huge ridge and camped in the head of this basin, which was epic, like beautiful country, ton of elk up there. But so maybe we just missed those spots that held them. But yeah, weird.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's, you know, the, if nothing else, the outfitter probably knows best. So, you know, if you're looking at some of those drainages and, you know, just being a good dude and saying, I'm not going to go mess with you and your hunt and I'm going to go find them somewhere else. Maybe it's just like, oh, I might have to step on your toes just a little bit, just so I can at least have a chance at that upper age class, if that's what you're looking for. I don't know. Sometimes that's, you know, when you're in an area like that, sometimes that's kind of how you have to do it. I think, you know, it's, that's, yeah, if the people are in one spot, they might be there for a reason, you know, but
yeah. Still, well, I wanted to talk, you know, yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, I wouldn't be, if the outfitters were in their camps when we went by them, I talk to everybody, dude. Like I don't care if I don't know you, if I run into you on the mountain, I'm going to talk to you. I want to know where you're going, what your plan is, so I can avoid you. Right.
Absolutely.
When I went by both of these outfitter camps, they were nowhere to be found.
Sure.
So like, I didn't get the opportunity to see if like they were just in there deer hunting. Like maybe they didn't have a client with a elk tag because sure, the deer season's at the same time. I was hoping to talk to them, but like, I'm not going to sit there all day for 5 or 6 hours until they come back. Right. So right, we just moved on. And yeah, anyway, deer wise too, real quick, before we get into your hunt, you know, I can draw the deer tag next year, unless the points go up again. We saw one buck in 10 days or 12, whatever it was, 12 days, 14 days. We saw one freaking buck. Now we weren't sitting up high glassing for them at first light. And, you know, last light, but you would think, in my opinion, with the amount of country that we covered, we would have just bumped more deer in the timber. I don't think we bumped a doe in the timber the whole trip.
I wonder, did you spend a lot of time up in the upper stuff, you know, glassing more of that open and scattered type stuff, or did you stay more kind of low? Because everything I've heard from even that country, even where I killed my buck, is, you know, they are
at the top.
They're at the top. And if you get up there, like even this year, I talked to some guys and they're like, yeah, man, if you get up there, there's some giant bucks. Yes. Like, yeah. Like we go hunt elk up there. We guide elk up there and we're not looking for deer and they're just in the right zone. And he's like, yeah, we see big deer every day or every other day, you know?
Exactly. That's what I expected. So the first 3 or 4 days we camped low and we hiked up 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 feet in the morning and hunted elk and then dropped back down. Day four, whenever it was that we moved our second camp, we were just below the basin, like low or not low. I mean, high, like we could see the top, the ridges, no problem. Right. Like easily. And we spent 3 or 4 days at that elevation and we didn't see one buck up there. We saw a couple does. So I was like, dude, do I want to burn my points? Like, where are the deer at? What the heck is going on? Like, it was weird.
Yeah. I think you should burn the points because I think I'm going to be hunting. I think my plan for next year is like the hunt I had planned this year, which is like a 9-day stretch. You know, I take a week of work off and hunt weekend, Saturday and Sunday. I think I'm going to spend it in that mountain range somewhere. I got sent a few pins for areas to go check out where there's some giant deer and some nice bulls running around that same thing. They're in there 8, 9, 10 miles that I'm like, yeah, I want to go do that. You know, if I've got 9 days, I might as well go play.
And this is in the unit I was in?
No, but it's close.
Close.
It's in the same range. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. It's one of those things too, is like the deer hunt is during elk season. So it's like, I love hunting mule deer, but not as much as I love chasing elk with a bow. I don't know if I could do that. That's weird.
Yeah. That's why whenever I'll do it, you know, it's interesting that, you know, the mule deer rifle hunt opens in a lot of those Western units, like the second week of September. It's crazy. So you got running bulls and you got people running around with rifles shooting deer. It's pretty insane. But like, that's kind of how I'm going to plan my big hunt every year is, okay, where do I want to go where do I think there's some big mature bulls hiding and some big mature bucks, and spend a couple days either scouting for mule deer and then chasing elk during the day. And then when opening day rolls around, try to have a buck already picked out and go fill my deer tag, and then keep hunting elk if I haven't filled my other tag. It's like,
yeah,
it's makes it nice for that. But man, it's pretty interesting to think there's rifle hunters running around while you got a bow in hand.
It's a weird dynamic. It's, you know, when I pull up to an out of state area that I've never stepped foot in before, and we saw the amount of trucks at this trailhead. I was telling my brother, and we had a camera guy on this trip, Logan Romney, filmed this whole hunt, which it's going to come out in December. I can't wait to share it with everybody. It's going to be a sick film. It's going to be a 2-part series actually. But, I was like, dude, I looked at my brother. I'm like, man, like if, we didn't have animals, I would have turned around and left immediately. Like I couldn't tell you how many times I've pulled into Plan A going to Idaho or Montana, wherever it was, and there was 3 or 4 trucks there. I immediately turned around and left, even though I'd already driven 12 hours. And the last thing I wanted to do was drive more. I would not go in there because I do not want to hunt with other people.
Sure.
But we went in there and we got way in there, and we didn't see a soul. That country is freaking huge. I mean, we saw people, but very, very rarely till the end of the hunt. So it was just amazing how vast those drainages are. Huge. But
yeah, it's incredible to see the amount of people out anymore, man. The unit I was in, like, I pulled up, same thing. I pulled up to the trailhead Friday to go scout, and I was like, I've never seen this many trucks here. It's like, maybe that's my fault for taking videos. Maybe some people found me out a little bit, but man, there's a lot of people showing up. And yeah, we got up in there, and there was one camp, but that guy was just looking for deer. And
yeah,
I don't know where the heck everyone else was hunting, because we didn't see anyone up with us. Like, here's the elk and there's no people. So I was like, perfect. I don't know where they were. But we had that issue with Ryan's Colorado hunt, a month ago now, with, there's people everywhere. I've never seen so many vehicles parked at every trailhead, every campground. And even on his hunt, that first hike we did, it was, yeah, we saw people in the canyon, but not the amount of people that, the vehicles would say there should be in here. So it's kind of weird. And I don't know what some people do with their time. Cause I feel like there's a limited amount of country that's good for hunting elk, and to get into those areas that you think you're going to be pressured, and then there's just no people, is kind of insane.
Yeah. I don't want to talk trash, but, I've noticed it a lot when I hunt out of state that you see a lot of people in camp early in the afternoon and late in the morning. Like if you're moving spots and you have to pick up your camp and relocate, like I'll see people in camp at 8 o'clock in the morning. Like, I'm like, dude, what are you guys doing? Like, why aren't you hunting? Or you'll come out of a spot in the evening to move camp, like relocate for the rest of the hunt, and I'll see a ton of people back at their camp hours before dark. And I'm like, some guys I think are just happy to be away and get a break from work. And there's a smaller group of people that are like, they're there to fill their tag. Like they're going to take every last minute they have and they're going to be hunting with it. So
I think that's so true too. I mean, I've noticed the same thing. Especially rifle season, there's plenty of guys that are like, man, I'm just out here to hang out with my buddies, drink some beer. And if we kill a deer or kill an elk, awesome. If not, I don't really care. And there's a place for that, and I'm cool with it. Go do your thing. But that's just, when I see people during those prime times or Like I'm one to never sit in camp. I'm either as best I can, either move in camp somewhere else or I'm sitting somewhere that gives me a chance. I don't like not being out there when I want to be, it's, you have to give yourself a chance, I feel like. But.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, enough rambling about elk. Let's talk about this freaking buck you killed. That's a stud deer as well. And I remember when you sent me the pictures, I was like, holy cow, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, I wish I had him in here, man. He's at the taxidermy. I need to call and see if they'll give me the skull plate back so I can go show him off a little bit. But so anyway, we got my bull out and hiked back in the next afternoon. And Ryan and I split up, glassed a few different bases that night before opening season, and we didn't see a buck that, broke 150, which, I'd be happy with a 150 buck normally, but up in these areas, I was like, I want 170 plus. I want something big and mature and cool. And so we got back to the tent that night and was kind of like, we glassed almost this whole high country. There's one basin we haven't looked at. The hill where I saw three great bucks last year, there was nothing on. Like, I don't know. I guess we'll just, go around this corner. There's really one drainage left to look in and in the morning. And, if there's nothing there, I don't know. I'll camp by myself for a day or two or something. But woke up early and blasted up this super steep ridge. Actually walked right past my kill site for this bull, climbing up this ridge. And, it's at first light, we can barely see some of the high country. And immediately Ryan picks out a buck. And we're at, I think, like 500 yards. And he's like, I can't tell how big he is. He looks good. You should have upgraded your gun and put turrets on it because we could shoot it from here. And I was like, fine, whatever. Let's go get close. So we're just going across this kind of scattered timber ridge to get closer, side hill really. And got into like 350 and could see like, oh yeah, that's a good mature deer. He's velvet. He's like, I don't know what he's quite going on. It's still like a little dark out, but he's a good buck. I'm never passing this deer. Let's just go get a shot. Couldn't get steady from 350. So I was like, hey, Ryan, you stay here. Like, this is the edge of the tree line. I'm going to crawl out there and try to find somewhere to lay. And ended up finding this little so the hill's like this. And I found two dead logs that were crisscrossed. And I tucked in the middle of them and have never been more steady in my life. I think I was sitting at 325 and just kind of was like, hey, Ryan, good to go. And he was, and made a perfect first shot. Ryan, Mr. Cameraman, was like, oh, I think you're a little behind him. So I did a quick second shot that went way over his back, and he dropped. It was perfect hard shot, the first shot. We just panicked a little bit. But I think he was probably 400 feet above us. We were shooting uphill at 300 yards. He was still that much elevation. Again, just another hunt that was like, how did that just happen so fast? Like, we didn't have a deer spotted. We didn't know what we were going to do today. And now we've just shot this good mature buck. And, so we, get up to him on this kind of scree slope, a little nasty. And as I get up, I'm like, what, what's going on there? And it's, you hear stories of people picking up a buck and there's points everywhere. And that's what it felt like, is like, you pick this buck up and he's got a split and a split and a kicker. And then as I'm sitting here looking at his antlers, his velvet is like perfectly gray, matches his coat. And I look down at his bases and it's like, oh, he's got an extra here on his base and here. And I was like, dude, what? Like, what is this buck? And so I think he ends up scoring as like a 9x6. So he's got one side that's mostly typical, just like a typical 5 with the one extra on the base. And then the other side that's just got junk, and he's just a cool shape. The only thing I'll complain about on him is that he stripped some velvet when he fell down, and that bummed me out. So he's got it. Now it's going to be hanging instead of covering it completely. But man, he was my biggest buck ever, I think, was last year, and that buck's nothing to write home about. You know, he's like 130s, upper 130s, which is, there's nothing wrong with a buck like that. But, you know, to go from that to this buck went, broke 170, and like, that's a huge jump to go from four points, 5 points under 150 to a 170. So yeah, pretty special. To get, just be, again, just kind of right place, right time, lucky. And we killed that buck, I think a half mile straight line from where this bull was lying dead. It's just like, man, what? And again, the whole 500 inch thing where I'm like, dude, we might have got it. Like, we're,
yeah, like close for sure.
When we got out and we taped them, I was like, man, my measurements got us like 498 out of 500. I'm like, I'm just going to say five because I'm not a pro at this. And, you know, that's 30, 35, 40 measurements, whatever it is between those two animals. I don't have to mess up much for it to be 8 inches bigger or 8 inches smaller. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But
man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to ask you though. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
I got to ask, I'm curious. So your hunts ended, both of them ended super fast after you kind of come off that adrenaline high and you come back to reality and you got all this work to do. Did the thought ever go through your mind? Like that you're kind of not bummed, but like your hunting season's kind of over, like almost immediately. Does that enter your head at all?
Immediately. Yeah. Well, maybe not quite immediately, more like, okay, we get to the truck and then I'm like, well, it's only,
this, can I get another tag somehow?
This is my first day of PT. Like I plan a 9-day hunt cause I love hunting, running bulls in this. Like I love it. That's why I go back every year, you know, not just for the quality, but I mean, I showed Ryan last year. He's like, this is the best elk hunting I've ever had in general. You're like, just so fun. You're just in elk all day and they're bugling and just a blast. So it's like, I feel like I missed out on my elk hunt this year. You know, there's something special about chasing rutting bulls in September that I just didn't get to do. You know, even, you know, I had a little bit to look forward to, you know, having Montana tags, but we came and hunted my Montana tag and there's lots of people. Most of the elk are on private. You know, we found some great bulls, but then like weather prevented me from going on hunts, and I just never got that good September elk hunt. So, you know, I hope next year kicks my ass because I want to have a fun season. You know,
you just gotta raise it up to like 360 or bust.
Yeah,
and...
yeah, for sure. Yeah, over the counter. Like, yeah, they're not shooting. There's a 340. No.
Nah, yeah, too small.
I know we've chatted about it in the past, but I think over the past 6 years, I've got 7 bulls now that are, if you include this year, that are 300 plus, or I think one's like 290s and the rest are all over 300. So yeah, I've been wondering myself, like, do I have it in me to pass a 300 class bull? Just because I'm in an apartment, man. This place looks silly. You can't see it, but this room's not bad. This is my own room, and I've got a pedestal mount. This one's usually hanging above my computer. I've got a mount there, and then in my living room, you know, I've got 2 shoulder mounts and 2 European mounts, and I've got a deer shoulder mount on the way, and I still have a deer and an elk tag to fill this year. And it's like, dude, I don't know what I need to do, if I need to start being pickier, but I feel spoiled, you know. I'm really grateful for all the good fortune I've had on a lot of these hunts. It's a good problem to have for sure. I can't really complain too much about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with the amount of work that you've put in, I mean, I don't know you super, super well, but I've chatted with you quite a bit now. And I mean, with the amount of work that you put in, I mean, it doesn't surprise me, man. It doesn't surprise me at all. You do the work. I mean, same with the deer, right? Like you knew there was good bucks in that country from years before. And, you know, sure enough, they were there again. You just had to check a different basin. And it's just all those years come together and makes it worthwhile. It makes it easier to get out and scout and put the work in the off season when you have that kind of success when hunting season comes around, because a lot of guys don't have that success. And it's probably mostly due to the fact that they don't scout or they don't put that the amount of effort into it that you do all year long. So it's cool, yeah, man. It's cool to see.
It's a constant thing, man. It's always on the brain. It's, I mean, even, man, last week, like trying to find new spots in Montana to hunt, you know, my permit was archery only and now it's general, and we haven't had any snow this year. And a lot of the areas that I like to hunt are big migration zones or winter zones, and we haven't had that. So, you know, sitting at work, even last week, I'm e-scouting and boom, I can see elk on Google Earth while I'm e-scouting. Like, okay, I want to go there. I know there's elk there. Yeah. Oh, this picture's from a month ago. Okay, there. Like, it's lots of time doing that, you know, being physically, obviously being in good physical shape helps a lot with success. That's why you guys are able to get back in there and do well and fill your guys' tags consistently too. And then, you know, just being, especially archery, being practiced up, man. I bought a new bow this year. I was sick of having my limit be 40 yards, 50 yards, and not even being terribly confident there. And I spent like $3,000 on a new bow setup. My bow's triple the cost of my rifle setup. And
yeah,
you know, and then spending literally every day at the range, some nights putting up 160 plus shots, practicing way out past where I'd ever shoot. And, you know, just there's so much that goes into it, even not just scouting. It's just there's so much that goes into being prepared for a season that I think being mentally ready is almost more important than anything. Because, like, yeah. I don't know how it works for you. I tend to black out when I shoot stuff. It's just gone. Like,
I would say I was the same way until the last 2 years. I would lose full control. I would somehow make shots that killed animals, usually like right in front of me. But yeah. It wasn't until I killed a bull in Idaho, I think it was 2 years ago. We had a camera guy with us as well. And as soon as I shot that bull, I looked back at the camera. I'm like, that is the most controlled shot I've ever made on a bull in my life. Like I knew exactly what I was going to do. The moment didn't get the best of me. I stopped the bull with a cow chirp. I waited for the bow to break, and I watched the arrow fly all the way to the bull and hit him before he left. But before that, all the bulls I killed, like I would look back at my brother or whoever was with me and like, I think I hit him, felt good, but like I totally blacked out.
Yeah. I don't know what it is, man. I don't know if it's like this year with my bull was cool. Cause you know, I decided to put those little lighted knocks on it and never used them. And so, I can remember after shooting, I can remember watching the arrow, like you said, but like the actual motion, the shot, the hold, like I can still see him, but it felt like in the moment that is like, it just kind of went from like, oh, I need to do whatever breathing or this to that, to just like instinctually just, boom, this is where I'm going to do this. Like, you know, not having ranges, just doing this and having it work out. I don't know. And I think that just, again, this part of that comes with just being practiced, that some of it's just, you don't got to think about it when you get in that moment. And I think a huge part too, now that I've killed a lot of nice bulls, is I don't really get nervous that, like, for the most part, you know, I get excited, but there's not really any like, oh no, here comes this big bull. Am I going to, like, there's no doubts. It's just, you know, it's, there's the bull. Here's what I have to do to kill it. And it just kind of works out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it just comes down to, it's a lifestyle. I'm not a ton of people ask me, but you know, I have friends and people that do reach out once in a while about archery hunting success with bulls. And I just tell people it's a lifestyle. It's not something that you pick up your bow in August and you shoot for 4 weeks and then you head off on your elk hunt. You know, mm-hmm. Same thing with you. When we were on our way home from Wyoming and just got back home from Idaho, I'm e-scouting and planning all year long for the next 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, I have a hunt plan of what states or multiple states that I can draw as the years go by. And I have units narrowed down in every state for rifle hunting and archery hunting that I'm going to try to draw when the time comes. And I have pins all over the place on all the e-scouting platforms, whether it's Go Hunt or Onyx or Google Earth. I use all of them. And like you said, the fitness, you know, hiking with your pack on, running, lifting weights. I'm not huge into lifting weights, but I do, you know, bench and squat and just kind of like the main core lifts to kind of just keep my core strong. And a lot, I mean, I feel like running and hiking with your pack on alone, like those two things keep you in great shape for hunting the mountains. And, you know, it's just something that you got to continually, you know, work on throughout the year, the whole thing, scouting, fitness, shooting. I'm in the process of building a new round for my gun. Like it never ends. I want to get more efficient shooting my rifle longer distances, and you just got to keep working at it, man. That's just all it comes down to.
Yeah. I think this year more than most, I think I came into archery season by far more prepared than ever. Like I always come in elk season prepared physically and mentally, but the amount of work I put in shooting was a lot of like, it was just fun. I mean, like every night, like I said, and I'm pretty excited now. I've been looking into trying to like open my own archery range. There aren't any good ones in town that you can shoot very far. And I really want to do that and like continue to be able to, okay, well, I filled my tag. Cool. But like, I loved going and shooting every night. It was a blast. I'd love to just be able to do that the whole year. And, you know, one thing I definitely need to get better at too is, you know, you talked about how you got all these states planned. It's like, I need to start putting in for states because I'm never going to catch up. You know, I'm going to be 50 yeah. before I draw some tags probably, you know, and that's going to suck.
But yeah, I started late too, man. It's never too late. You know, you can still do it. I mean, I'm 37 going on 38. Didn't grow up in a big hunting family. I didn't start building points till I was like 30. So you got plenty of time. Just make sure you start now. That's all I can say. Just start now.
I think one of the biggest reasons I haven't is like, especially being located in Wyoming, and you know, I can get my Wyoming elk and deer tag. I'm from Montana and they have some programs in place to where I can get tags up there every year, don't have to draw them. So immediately I've got 2 elk tags and 2 deer tags in my pocket. And then, you know, Colorado may have changed their system, but it's not that hard to get a Colorado elk tag if I want it. And Idaho is changing their system for this year. And, you know, that's going to look different. It's going to be more difficult moving forward for some stuff, but it's still probably not going to be that terribly difficult. So I'm kind of like, I'm good. Like, I don't know if I need to go to Utah or go to New Mexico or, you know, go to some of these places that I think I'd have a lot of fun in, because I'm just so overwhelmed with the amount of opportunity I already have up here.
But yeah, that's true. I mean, from my perspective, being in Washington, our hunting isn't nearly what other states offer. So it's points for us are a big deal, you know, if you want to hunt out of state. But yeah, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole with Idaho, but man, I'm super pissed about that system. I'm not a fan of it at all. You know, I think I'll touch on it briefly. For the guys that were willing to go the extra mile, you could get a tag every year in Idaho. I know that firsthand. I slept outside in front of all different sorts of places to get tags, waited in the queue, picked up return tags. I hunted new zones almost every year in Idaho and was able to find success on elk and deer. This whole draw thing, I'm not a fan of at all, because I personally feel like depending on where you're located in the country, like you're going to have an upper hand on one state or the other, right? Like you're going to be able to scout. If you're from the East Coast or the, you know, the middle of the country, you're going to be able to scout Colorado for OTC tags and have an upper hand on that. You know, there's always an upper hand some way or somehow, depending on where you're located. Right. So it pisses me off that I was always willing to go the extra mile to get a tag. And now I don't even have that opportunity. I just got to be in this lottery and hope for the best, I guess.
That's so funny. I didn't even start looking into Idaho until I think 2 years ago. And I always got in the queue because I didn't know about going the extra mile. And I don't think I even knew about that till like this year. I talked to someone. I was like, how did you get a tag? Like, I was on there for 2 hours waiting. And they're like, oh, yeah, you could just show up in person. So I was super excited for this year to be like, okay, I don't care if I have to take a day off work. I want to drive to whatever town I can, 5 hours, 6 hours away, whatever it is, and go pick up an Idaho tag that I want to hunt. Like, and just, yeah, losing that opportunity is definitely unfortunate.
I mean, it wasn't even that, like that was, I wasn't even aware of that until a couple of years ago myself, but shit, there was a year that Jake and I picked up return tags in like July or August.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we would get in the queue each month when the return tags went for sale. And of course we had a list of, you know, three or four zones that we wanted to hunt. And finally in July or August, we picked up two return tags. And guess what? We went to that unit. I killed my brother killed a 5-point bull on day three, packed out half of it day three, the other half day four. In the morning of day five, I killed a 6-point.
Yeah.
So like, it's just one of those things where, you know, you get into July and August and a lot of guys have already, you know, given up hope on getting an Idaho tag. They've drawn their tags elsewhere or they picked up a Colorado, right? So there was always a way it felt like to get a tag there. And, now it's that opportunity is pretty much gone. So I get it. For the state of Idaho, it's a huge money thing. Now everybody has to buy a non-resident tag to apply. So, you know, do the math. $200 almost for a tag or for a license. And let's say there's 30,000 people that are going to go into this draw, probably at least, and it's millions of dollars that they were missing out on. So sure. I get it. I get it for the guys that live in Missouri and New York and whatever that weren't going to drive to Idaho, but, it's a bummer, dude. Super bummed about that one. Yeah. So,
yeah. So, what other hunts you got coming up this year, Ian?
We're done, man. Got back from Rifle Elk in Idaho on Friday or Saturday. I think it was Saturday. So we're done. We're done for the year. I do have a late buck tag in Washington, but I'm not going to be able to hunt it just due to work. So I'm looking forward to next year already. Spring bear in Idaho, hopefully. And then, we'll see what we draw. We'll see what we decide to do. I haven't made up my mind completely yet on what I'm going to apply for.
Heck yeah. I'm surprised you're done. I mean, I've still got, I can go all the way in Montana until middle of December. I think there's that heritage muzzleloader season. So if I haven't filled my tags, my hunt might not be over till like the 20th of December or something, you know, before Christmas. It's crazy to hear that you're done, but, one thing I would like to do at some point is I need to find some sort of hunt to fill the gap between, you know, fall, winter, and the next year. You know, I'd love to do spring bear or a turkey or go hunt whitetail somewhere. You know, I need to start traveling some more and getting some other hunts in and getting some experience in other areas. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Spring bear is a blast. It's I think this will be our fourth or fifth season coming up, spring bear, and man, I really enjoy it. It's a great time to get on the mountain. It's awesome. Super fun. I think we saw 11 bears in 4 or 5 days last year. It was a lot of fun. So I would highly suggest checking that out. Idaho, just hop on Go Hunt or Idaho Fish and Game website and just do some homework. And there's a lot of units that have a ton of bears.
So say, I think I'm sure the hunting here is plenty good. I should probably just do it here. I do have a bear license in my pocket. I just never do it. You know, I grab one because occasionally I see them, but I just, yeah, it's just, they've never been like, I'm going to go do this. And I think that's something that maybe I should do this year is rather than taking a big shed hunt this year, say, I'm going to go kill a spring bear just to at least check it off and, you know, see if it's something that I want to want to do in the future more.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't looked into Wyoming spring bear. I don't even know if they have a season. I've always just gone to Idaho or Oregon, but yeah, I'm sure Wyoming has an incredible season for spring bear like they do everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure they've got one. I haven't looked either. But I'm, you know, I think last year on trail cams, I had like 10 or 11 different bears on like within like a mile or something in one of the units. And I'm like, yeah, and I should probably buy a bear tag moving forward just in case, man. I wish I would have had one in Montana. We were taking a nap, on my archery hunt. We're sitting at this wallow and we're just napping in the wide open middle of the day. And all of a sudden I hear some rustling and I kind of peek my head up and there's this giant brown phase black bear at like 5 yards. And I just went, and like sat up and like reaching for my pistol, you know, just panicking. There's this huge animal right there. Ryan was fast asleep. I'm like, dude, bear. And he's just like, well, you know, just shut up, mom. You know, I'm sleeping. Yeah. There's just big old bear right there. And man, that would have been a cool situation to be sitting there with a bear tag in my hand. But yeah, just glad it wasn't a grizzly. Glad we weren't in Wyoming because it would have gone.
Yeah. But definitely. Well, hey man, let's wrap this thing up. It's been an hour and 15 minutes. Tell the audience where they can find you guys on Instagram and YouTube, and yeah, we'll call it a podcast.
So our Instagram, YouTube, I don't think we TikTok much, but I think we have one. They're all the same handle. It's Beaverhead_antlers. We do a little bit of hats. So if you guys want a hat, support the brand, support some of our hunting trips we're going on. Finally got an LLC set up so we can be taking in some money and spending it and, you know, actually using our funds in a good way. But anyway, I appreciate any support and, yeah, thanks for having me, Steve.
Absolutely. Well, you guys listen and you know what to do. Go, follow and subscribe, go check out some YouTube videos. They're awesome. And thanks again, man. I really appreciated you hopping on as always. And it's always a pleasure to chat with you. So we'll definitely have to do it again and stay in touch.
Yes, sir. Sounds good. Thank you.